What is up, DMV Hoops fans? It is another edition of Believe in DMV Hoops. As you're probably wondering, why is Matt Moderno still gone? He is on vacation, but we are still here. It is me, Brant. It is me, Jonas Evans, with Brandon Schwartzberg and Nathan Schwartz. Gentlemen, thank you for joining me once again.
It is an absolute pleasure to be back.
Yeah, round two. Let's get this thing going.
All right, let's just get the cleanup out of the way. As always, we are presented by BetOnline. BetOnline continues to be your number one source for all your basketball wagering needs, including pro and college hoops throughout the year. With up-to-minute odds, stats, and trends, you can follow your favorite team's path to the playoffs with in-game live betting, contests, and all your best player props. Experience the world's best wagering platform anytime from your desktop or your mobile device. Head to BetOnline today to become part of the team. And remember to use promo code BELIEVE for your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, the game starts here. Use that promo code. A lot of March Madness games going on right now. It's been very exciting. Speaking of March Madness, a team that did not make it was Maryland men's basketball. So gentlemen, let's first go to this Big Ten tournament. And it started, surprisingly, with a pretty dominant win over Rutgers, 65-51. What were the initial takeaways from this one? Because I'm sure all three of us were a little surprised by how dominant of a win this was.
Yeah, I think the win over Rutgers kind of showed the potential Maryland had this season. I mean, they had four guys in double figures, Jamie Kaiser with 11. Jameer Young had one of his worst games of the season, only with 11 points, 4-for-11 shooting, but they still won by 14. I think the strong defense they relatively had the entire year showed, and the offense did enough, kind of connected enough to get the win. But again, as we saw in the Wisconsin game, they didn't have consistency at all this season, and that ultimately cost them.
Yeah, I didn't get a chance to watch this game live. I'm looking on my phone, and I see that Maryland's up by like 15 or 16. Like 5 minutes into the game, I'm like, whoa, okay, this is something that we're not used to seeing from this Maryland squad. And I think the guys came ready to go. They came prepared. It was a Rutgers team that they had already seen twice, once at home, once away. The road team won both of those games. Now you get a chance to play this team on a neutral site. And as Brandon mentioned, the defense was there. It was strong. It's the way the defense played the entire season. And to have Jamie Kaiser score 11, to have Juju Reese come back after missing the final game of the regular season due to injury and have 12 points, to have Dante Scott have a good offensive day, and limited shots, only took 7, but he makes 4, and to have that balanced approach offensively when Jameer Young doesn't have to be the end-all be-all, the guy that scores 30 points and can will you to win, when you have that balanced approach, that's the way it should be. And that's the way that's how you win tournament games at this time of year. And it, of course, didn't work in their favor against Wisconsin, but this is still a positive to take into next year that they were able to move on to the second day of the tournament.
Yeah, Brandon, you mentioned the defense, and I think that's probably one of the only things that they have been consistent with is the defense. And you guys are right. I mean, this wasn't an excellent shooting day for Maryland anyway. They went 7-for-20 from three. I guess that's relatively good for the Terps, and 43% shooting from the field. But Rutgers had nothing going. 5-for-21 from three, 19-for-61 from just general field goals. So the Terps defense has been pretty consistent all year, but it's just the fact that there, again, has been no consistent scorer. Like you said, it's strange for Jameer Young to have such an off game in such an important series. So definitely a little bit of surprise there. And you guys kind of mentioned the Northwestern or the Wisconsin loss. And this was one that I think you can maybe point to a few issues the Terps had, but really, I think this is mostly about Wisconsin, especially the three-point shooting. I mean, that was kind of ridiculous.
Yeah, I think Wisconsin just kind of went on a run in the Big Ten tournament. And I think you can see both sides because, again, Jameer had bounced back, had a good game, 18 points, over 50% shooting. But then what does Kaiser do? He goes 1-for-6. What does Dante Scott do? He goes 1-for-4. And so it was kind of the consistent theme all season. There was no consistent number two for Maryland. And on a rare day for their season, when the defense wasn't up to par, they didn't have enough scoring to overpower that. And again, kind of Jonas, like you said, Wisconsin just—I mean, you can't beat 16 threes. That's an incredible amount. And so I think as soon as they really started to get on that run early on, you could kind of sense that Maryland was not going to make that comeback.
Yeah, I mean, 16 threes overall. 8 of those came from the bench. right for Wisconsin. There was no way Maryland was going to win this game, no matter what they did, no matter whether Jameer Young put up 35, 40 points. This was a game that was Wisconsin's all the way. And the one thing I do want to take away from this game, though, is Deshaun Harris-Smith going 6 of 15, 3 of 4 from beyond the arc, 16 points. This was one of his better shooting games of the season. And it seems like he's going to come back and join this team next year. And who knows whether he's going to be in the starting five next year or whether he's going to be that sixth man off the bench. But this has got to be a positive moving forward, knowing that he has shown signs of improvement as the season goes on. And in a game like this, to where there's not a whole lot of positives to take away, this is one of them. And the fact that Harris Smith is going to be a building block for this program moving forward, it's got to be an exciting thing for Maryland fans.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Let me just kind of go off that for a second. Just, I think especially his three-point shooting, I mean, 3 for 4 from deep, I think that's going to be huge because, Nate, we'll get into this a little bit later with the transfers with and how the team is going to look next year. But if he can get that consistent three-point shooting, it's because they'll probably have Julian Reese and Derek Queen in the front court. I think that'd be massive to kind of really solidify his spot in the starting five, and I think that would go a long way for next year.
Yeah, and Brandon, you're right. Unlocking the three unlocks a lot of stuff for Deshaun Harris-Smith, because if you watched him in high school, like, he was not playing the way he was playing for the Terps. He had a lot of the ball. He was driving to the rim. He was very physical. He was dominant on the court, and he just hasn't really been able to display any of that recently. And I think it's partly because teams aren't really afraid of his three-point shooting. So if he can improve that, they can take advantage of, like, the qualities of this player that were the reasons why he was such a highly touted recruit and why the team wanted him in the first place. So a lot of things could be unlocked with that three-point shooting. But realistically, I want to go back to one other thing you said, Brandon, which was just the fact that they caught fire, Wisconsin caught fire. And I just think we didn't see that from the Terps at all this year. No one caught fire. No one had a string of games where they were shooting really well. You could argue Jameer had, you know, good stretches, but he was kind of their consistent scorer anyway. So no one had that. This was never a period at all this season when anyone kind of got hot. And I think that this kind of has almost been the constant theme for Maryland basketball since we've been here, which is, where is the shooting? Where is the three-point shooting? How is this, a top basketball program that has struggled to find any kind of shooters in recent years? And I don't know how that problem gets solved other than recruiting, but it really is something to point to.
Yeah, I mean, they only had 3 games the entire season where they made at least 10 threes. And I think at the end of the day, that's kind of where the problem lies. Because in this day and age of basketball, you're not going to be able to win on a consistent basis if you can't make teams defend the three, especially when next year your front court is going to be very, very skillful. But if you're not shooting the three, they can just really post up and double team. And so I think that next year, they're really going to have to. I think this offseason, and we've seen that with Kevin Willard so far in the transfer portal, is he's looking for guys that can shoot the three, that can spread the floor. I mean, again, I think the expectation is you're going to get better shooting from DHS, from Jamie Kaiser, especially Kaiser. I mean, coming in, he's this great 3-and-D player. He didn't really shoot the three well, but I mean, it's his freshman year. Who knows what happened? I think he'll be better next year. And so I think they'll be better next year. I really don't see a way they can be worse, if I'm being honest. I mean, they only shot, I think, 28% from three for the entire season. So I think that's kind of the biggest thing that they have to improve for next year. And I think Willard's done a good job in the transfer portal getting that. And then again, if you can get that DHS last game of the season kind of continuing into next season, that'll really play.
And Chance Stevens too. Chance Stevens is back. So in theory, yeah, there's some better three-point shooting there because obviously they lost him for the year. So that was a big deal. Nate, do you have anything to add there? Or should we move
now,
on to?
Now let's go. Right. Let's go forward.
All right. I guess we can talk a little bit more on a macro level about the season as a whole, because when we went into it, we've mentioned this a lot, both in the last podcast and just in general with what the expectations were for this year, especially with the incoming freshman class. But the Terps end up having a below 500 record, 16-17, 7-13 in the conference, one of the worst teams in the Big Ten this year. And it was a downgrade from Willard's first year when it was less his team, and this year was more his team, and they struggled more. So I guess it's possibly an indictment. I mean, it's definitely an indictment on the freshman, but I think it's a significant indictment on Willard himself, because this was the first time that this was genuinely his blueprint, and they struggled all year.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I think it's more so. Yeah, thanks. I think it's more so the roster construction that we had to take a look at. And you said it, Jonas. This was Mark Turgeon's team 2 years ago. And during Kevin Willard's first season as head coach, you had a lot of the residual players left over, the Hakeem Harts, the Dante Scotts. Yes, Kevin Willard brings in Jameer Young, and that was a phenomenal get, and a get that Maryland fans will never forget. But a lot of the impact players during Willard's first season were from that Mark Turgeon recruiting era. Then you come in this season, and the roster construction wasn't great. When you have two freshmen and Jamie Kaiser and Deshaun Harris-Smith that are getting a lot of minutes when they probably weren't ready for that many minutes, especially Harris-Smith. Chance Stevens, I'm not going to fault anybody for that, because who knows what that would have been if he stayed healthy. I think the team is a lot better that way. But then bringing in Jordan Geronimo late because Ian Martinez leaves for the portal, that was really the one where you have to look back. And Ian Martinez is leading Utah State to a first-round win in the NCAA tournament, and Maryland fans are just sitting there like, man, this guy would have been extremely helpful. And I know, Jonas, you were on that hype train for a couple of years trying to
get... And it's just the experience too, right? I mean, right. Nate, yeah. you mentioned it with all the young players, and there was no... And maybe it's also kind of a comment on Dante Scott and some of the other veterans there, but like Jameer Young had only been at Maryland for a year. Jameer Young came in he had only been there for a year. And then you've got Dante Scott, who's been there for a long time, but I don't see any kind of influence. I don't see any kind of culture being built here at all. It doesn't really seem like there's any kind of consistency with what the strategy is, what the, like you said, roster construction there. It's surprising to me how little vision was displayed in these last few years, for sure.
Yes, and Juju Reese doesn't really take that next step forward, right? Like, he takes that step forward his sophomore season and then kind of flattens out in his junior year, and I think losing Grant Billmeyer is a big part of that. But there's still got to be some improvement there, and I think it was just kind of a stagnant year for Reese.
Yeah, just kind of quickly, the worst thing that could have happened for Kevin Willard was making the NCAA tournament and winning a game in his first season, because the expectations then skyrocket. I mean, then if you don't make the tournament again, it's a disappointment, and it's only your second season. So, I mean, I kind of had that worry going in to where you would have to theoretically win two NCAA tournament games to have a better season than last year. And I just don't think for a second-year coach, while granted Maryland's this great basketball program, that's difficult for just your second year in this new place when it's still some of the remain from Turgeon. Still, two of your starters are guys that Mark Turgeon brought into the program. And so I think this is going to be the true, okay, Kevin Willard, what are you about? And I think he learned from his mistake and not really attacking the transfer portal, because they already got two really impact guards. And I think that gives me promise for next year, is that I think he learned from his mistakes from last offseason.
Yeah, I mean, so we can kind of get into that a little bit. But Nate, first of all, I want to say something about Reese, because what you said was interesting. He has stagnated a little bit, but you know, he still knows how to score in the NCAA, like in Division I basketball. He still is a relatively consistent scorer. I'd say outside of Jameer, he was definitely number two there for the Terps this year. How much of an impact is Derek Queen going to make on what Juju Reese can do? Because I think the one thing that we've always kind of noted with Reese was that he is not this big presence in the paint that most other dominant centers in the Big Ten or whatever, like he's a little bit smaller. He's a little bit more active. He's a little more athletic. And I think at like a four with a Derek Queen next to him, we could see a jump once again, because he's got that ability to kind of play as a little more of an athletic four than maybe the five that he's been put at so far.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you can take it more as an opening up approach, right? To where, okay, Derek Queen comes in, now you have to have two focus. And I was actually looking this up, but in the 2018-2019 season, you had a similar thing with Bruno Fernando and Jalen Smith, to where you had to pick one. You couldn't double Bruno Fernando anymore because Jalen Smith was on court. And it was the same thing in the backcourt with Anthony Cowan, Aaron Wiggins, and Daryl Morsell. You had so many options and so many elite scorers to where there was no way you could double team somebody, because that left a lane open for somebody else. So I think with Juju Reese and Derek Queen in the front court, that kind of same mentality will be there for opposing defenses, of to where, okay, Juju Reese is this proven scorer in the paint. Derek Queen plays the same style of basketball. What do we do here? And I think that's going to be a really interesting dynamic and one that I think works in Maryland's favor.
Let's go back a little bit.
Just one quick thing. I think it works in Maryland's favor, but it can also work in the other team's favor, because if you think about it, they could clog the paint at times. If you've got two guys there that don't really have a threat, even in the mid-range, then it's okay. Even so, for the guards, it's going to be very difficult for them to drive because you're going to have two defenders in the paint regardless. And so I think for Juju, I mean, he didn't even have a threat of a three last year. And I think that's kind of the problem. Like, his freshman year only played 17 minutes a game, but he still averaged 0.73 attempts per game, shot 30% from three, and even 80% for the free throw line. I think if he can just kind of get a little bit to that level, that'll really help open the floor.
Yeah, the spacing will definitely be interesting. We've got a question from Matt Moderno. I'm not exactly sure who that is, but probably just a fan. Deshaun Harris-Smith has maintained that he can still be a primary ball handler. Did you guys see him make enough of a leap as a facilitator for him to replace Jahari Long as a backup point guard? Now, I will say, DHS as a backup point guard coming off the bench sounds like a much better idea than what I've seen so far from him this season. So that seems, and maybe not necessarily this season, but I've seen enough of him as a facilitator just in his tape in general to know that he definitely has that ability. What do you guys think?
I think that it'd be definitely an interesting option. I think that talent wise, he'd probably be belonging in the starting five, but if you can get another kind of someone talented with him, even if you just put Kaiser in there to start, because he's more kind of that wing, that really 3-and-D guy, and then have DHS running the point, I think that it's an option. I don't know personally if I've seen enough playmaking from him, but granted, that's also because for the most part he's playing with Jameer Young really had the ball in his hands a lot. But I think that could be beneficial for DHS because he wasn't great at shooting threes. He wasn't as up to par as maybe some fans have hoped. And so let him run the point. Let him just see. It's a different option. Again, in the beginning of the season, you're going to be playing non-conference games. You're going to be playing kind of games against the lower end of competition in Division I. So try some things out. That's when you see what's figuring it out. Because, I mean, Kevin Willard said at the beginning of this season that he was still tinkering with some lineups. And so, I mean, I'd imagine that's going to be the case again early next season. And so I think I'd like to see it. I definitely like to see it. I don't know how much faith I have that it'd be a great option right now. But again, why not try it?
Yeah, I think the tough thing that you have to think about here is, even though that does sound like a better idea, right? And I think he would succeed more in that six-man role. He already has the starting experience. So do you want to put Jamie Kaiser in the starting lineup and try and balance that out and have Harris Smith come off the bench? Or do you just continue to let Deshaun get those minutes as the starter and keep the same thing with Jamie Kaiser? I think that's an interesting thing to tinker with. I tend to agree with Brandon here, and I think sliding Kaiser into the starting lineup will work better for next year's team because you're going to have Rodney Rice and Jacoby Gillespie in the backcourt, and you need that stretch on the wing. You need that 3-and-D guy. You need the ability to have a guy in the corner rather than mold yourself into more of a stagnant approach if you have a bunch of guys that aren't going to be able to shoot the basketball from the mid-range and from beyond the arc.
I think that just one more point about that, Kaiser. I just want to really emphasize, especially if you're going to have Julian Reese and Derek Queen in the front court, just to have that guy in the corner, like Nate said, I think it's for next year's team, the way it's the makeup is so far, I think Kaiser being that starting lineup is definitely the better option over DHS. But then again, DHS started basically every game his freshman year. How is he going to feel if he moves to that backup point guard?
Right.
I think that's what matters in this day and age of the transfer portal.
Yeah, absolutely. That's definitely the big thing with benching him. And also just with Jamie Kaiser, it's also the versatility, right? I mean, this guy can more or less defend almost anyone on the court, can shoot from relatively anywhere. Like, he is a very versatile player. So putting him in the starting lineup would make a lot of sense too. Let's talk about that portal quickly. We have 3 exits so far for the Terps. And I don't know how notable this is, but a lot of them make sense. The big one to me is Jonathan Lamoth leaving. Again, part of those 3 freshmen that came in. Very exciting. This was the most local guy from Baltimore. But he just really couldn't find his rhythm at all this season. He averaged 0.8 points per game, 0.7 rebounds per game, 0.3 assists per game, really struggled to make an impact. I made a joke when I was watching him play, like, you know, he's a great passer. And I mean, I thought he was a great passer, but really every time you watched him, very little impact, very little ability to actually impact the game in the slightest, whether that be playmaking, shooting, anything like that. Really, it just, there was no explosiveness. There was no addition to the team, I guess, from that sense. And it's not really surprising that LaMoth is gone.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing with LaMoth is that he only played in 8 games after the non-conference season ended, one of those being the blowout loss to Wisconsin. And so I think it was kind of the writing on the wall. He was going to be gone. I just think there were too many kind of options there. He was too similar to what they had. And again, if he was a highly touted freshman, if he's only playing that few amount of games, I think kind of a reason behind that. And I just think it just didn't click in Cox Park.
Yeah, I think maybe I don't want to say it was too high of a level of basketball for him, but I think there was such just a log jam at the top there when you have Jahari Long, when you have Deshaun Harris Smith, when you have Jamie Kaiser, and you have a bunch of options that have more experience and were getting more experience early in the season. It was just really hard for him to get minutes. I think if he were to go somewhere like George Mason or VCU, you know, a couple of local schools, you know, maybe Tony Skin brings him in, somebody that helped recruit him to College Park and could really unlock that potential in somebody to where he could start every game and work out those kinks. And that's a player that I don't think he would thrive off the bench. I think he needs to be in the starting lineup and settle into a game more than being relied upon and have an instant impact right when you come off the bench.
Yeah, because I would argue that LaMoth was probably, out of the three freshmen, probably the least role player, I guess. He was probably the biggest playmaker in high school. So you're right, Nate. I think he just needs to find the place where that's at his level to be a starter. Anything else on LaMoth, or should we talk about?
Yeah, I just got one quick thing, Nate. You probably didn't know this, but on 247 Sports, the guy that they listed LaMoth was recruited by for Maryland was Tony Skin. So you might be looking at something with that, George Mason. Yeah.
You know, so if that happens, I'm coming back. I'm going to clip this.
I'll make sure to clip it for you.
Okay. Thank you.
And I feel like I need to get a little bit of the respect for bringing that out. Just saying, a little credit, right? Just at the very bottom, the little tiny font.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I'll think about it. All right. Let's move on to our 3-point specialist, Noah Batchelor, who is gone as well. 1.7 points per game, 0.3 rebounds per game. This is just another one of those where every role player that I feel like has been brought in the last 2 years has just completely been unable to actually serve their purpose. And Noah, and I know that sounds pretty extreme, but like Noah Batchelor is the best example of this, as someone who we never saw him, and we never even saw him play like what he was supposed to do. There was never a moment where it's like, all right, this is a big game. We've got Noah Batchelor there on the corner, and he's going to hit a three if they pass it to him. That was never the case. And it's just another one of these situations where I don't know how much of this is on Willard, and I don't know how much of this is just the players not being to the level that they need to be, but there was no implementation of this guy in the team. And especially when the 3-point shooting was such an issue, has been such an issue for so long. It is a little frustrating that Batchelor didn't see more of the court, and is just another one of these players that saw a few minutes and is gone now in the transfer portal. It feels like a little bit too repetitive for me in this situation where these players didn't get a chance to prove themselves.
Yeah, I mean, Batchelor averaged 6.7 minutes his freshman year, 7.7 minutes last year. I mean, it just never clicked kind of with LaMoth. Just he didn't get enough playing time. And after 2 years, I think he and probably the coaching staff, just it was a mutual parting ways. It was just, all right, about time they can get something better, especially with the transfers they have coming in, the recruits that are going to come in. I just think that they needed spots open, and I think it was probably just like a mutual parting of ways. I don't think either side is necessarily very upset with the decision.
Yeah, and you think about it, if Chance Stevens plays, does Batchelor even get those 7.5 minutes per game? Probably not, right? Because, I mean, there was a lot of times this year where Noah Batchelor was one of the first subs into the game. He even got a chance to take a final shot at the beginning of the season. So it's not that the coaching staff didn't have faith in his abilities. It's just like what Tejonas said, he wasn't able to execute on that. And it's like, Brandon, what you said, it was just time. There was no way forward to where he was going to make an impact in College Park. And another player that probably just needs to take it down to another local level school like a VCU or something like that, maybe Howard, to where he could just start right away and just pop threes and see what happens.
And I think I've noticed this where we have a lot of players here that I think maybe even if they started, say, at a George Mason, could have found themselves in this Maryland lineup with legitimate playing time if they got that experience. I think what we're noticing here is, and with the transfer portal coming in, and this is kind of almost like an indictment on college basketball as a whole, it's very hard for freshmen to come in and be able to play and have an impact. When you're just coming into college basketball, especially when you're at a bigger program, it's very difficult to make an impact. When you've got guys coming in from smaller schools who have already been playing at this level, who know what it's like, who know how to score points. So I think that probably has kind of been to the detriment of LaMothe and Batchelor there. I guess let's talk about Swanton Roger too, because I don't think this is one as much where, I mean, he obviously didn't really, again, make as much of an impact, but I think this might be a little bit more of like a Derek Queen thing than a unsatisfied thing, because Swanton Roger got like decent playing time this year. He was on the court like more than I'd say expected. So what do you guys think of that transfer?
Yeah, I definitely think kind of Jonas, what you said, it's about there's not going to be enough playing time for him next year. Because he played in 31 games. Like he was always the backup big man. I just think with Derek Queen coming in, it just didn't work out. It's funny because it seemed like every time he would come in, he had three fouls already. He was just kind of the go-to fouler to get to let Julian Reese get some time off the bench. But no, I just think that he kind of with Noah Batchelor, just there wouldn't be enough minutes for him next year. It's whatever. I think it's kind of a mutual just parting of ways.
Yeah. And you know, it's interesting because there still needs to be that reserve big man, right? Like that's still a role that needs to be filled on this team. And I think Swanton Roger would have fit that role pretty well. And you know, the pressure's off. Like I think Derek Queen being there almost would have helped Swanton Roger, because then you don't have to be that immediate guy that comes off the bench. If one of the two of Reese and Queen get in foul trouble, you can just slide into a bit of a smaller lineup and maybe bring in a Chance Stevens and a Deshaun Harris-Smith off the bench with Gillespie and Rice. And then you have Reese or Queen down low, and Swanton Roger would only come in those situations if you wanted to play bigger and one was in foul trouble or vice versa. But, you know, it just didn't work out. And I think that is a player that can really thrive elsewhere if he limits the fouls, as Brandon mentioned. It just seemed like he was always getting into foul trouble. 15, 20 seconds of entering the game, he had a foul on him. If he's able to clean that up a little bit and play a little less aggressive, I think the sky could be the limit for him, because he does have the scoring ability, as we saw a little bit over the last two seasons.
Nate, to kind of piggyback off what you said about kind of the depth in the backcourt, don't forget about Braden Pierce. I mean, remember, he was kind of recruited last year. He redshirted. And so I think that it's not necessarily the biggest deal for Maryland that they're losing Swanton Roger, because assuming the expectation is since Pierce is staying, he's going to kind of step into that role.
Yeah, it's true, Brandon. I didn't think about Pierce, because for a second, the lack of bench centers would have been an issue, but I think Pierce can probably fill that role. I don't think it's really going to be a detriment to Maryland's success next year if they don't have like an elite backup center. But
honestly, Brandon, I completely forgot he existed. I'm not gonna lie,
I figured, yeah.
Well, he redshirted, so you know it's not on us. All right, well, let's talk about the guys that are coming in to solve this problem. And this is going to be interesting, because Brandon, you mentioned that, or Nate, I think you mentioned the, you know, this is really going to be Kevin Willard's team now. We're going to see a completely new front court now, and it's going to be very interesting. Two good recruits from the transfer portal. First, Jacoby Gillespie coming from Belmont. He averaged 17.2 points per game, 3.8 rebounds, 4.2 assists. Brandon, do you want to go into, we have some good stats here. I don't know. Give me some stuff on Gillespie and how good of an impact he can be.
Yeah. No, I'm pulling this from one of my good friends, Harrison Rich, on Twitter. He does a great job of looking at KenPom and everything like that. He tweeted out how Gillespie placed himself in elite statistical company this past season. He was among the best guards to record a box plus minus above 7 on at least 24% usage. 9 of the 15 that he's in with, according to Mickey Wolcott of the Diamondback, played in the NCAA tournament. And so I think that it's a very, it's a, one of the biggest gets Willard's had, I think, especially because with Rodney Rice, he left the program kind of midway through the season. So you don't necessarily know what you're fully going to get from him. But I think Jacoby Gillespie, you know, you're going to get a really great guard who can really set the tone on offense, kind of the next Jameer Young, so to speak, kind of going from a mid-major to Maryland. And I think that it was really impactful for Willard to get it, because now, again, that gives less pressure off of DHS for next year.
Nate, anything on Gillespie?
Yeah, I think when you look at a guy that averages 17 points, wherever he comes from, that's going to be an impact player. And we talked about guys coming from smaller programs to then stepping into a bigger program like Maryland. I think this plays into that point exactly, to where you have a guy averaging 17 points a game, 4 rebounds, 4 assists per game. That's another player that can be the facilitator that we wanted to see more out of from Deshaun Harris-Smith. And I think this is going to be a perfect player that already has the experience. Will have a lot of pressure on him to fill the shoes of Jameer Young, but I think he's going to be able to fill those shoes and be an elite scorer at this level.
It's really interesting too, how quickly this, like how Willard's, the people Willard is bringing in have been completely different season over season. It was a group of freshmen last year. It was very much, you know, these guys are going to be the reason why we win games. All of a sudden he's, like you said, completely shifted his mentality. And now the reason why they're going to win games, if they do win games, is going to be because of this front court that got brought in through the transfer portal. And Rodney Rice is kind of a big thing too, because DMV Hoops fans, he went to DeMatha. It's a local guy. So maybe, you know, Willard's actually done a decent job over these last few years of getting players that are from this area, which I think even if it's through the transfer portal, is still a very good sign for his ability to kind of, even with losing the assistant coaches, to kind of still be tapped into the area a little more. So I think that's definitely a benefit. And Rodney Rice is a high upside player. Like he could make a significant impact. And like you mentioned, Nate, transfers coming from smaller schools have done pretty well at Maryland over the last few years. So I think it's moving in at least a better direction. Anything on Rice, Brandon? Do you have anything else on Rodney Rice?
I mean, he was a 4-star recruit. He was third in Maryland in his class. I mean, it kind of, again, Jonas, what you're saying, piggybacking off the importance of getting these guys that are local. I think that's one of the things that Mark Turgeon really struggled with. And I think that Kevin Willard, starting with Jameer Young, is really making sure that he gets back to the local recruiting aspect. And I think at the end of the day, that's one of the biggest things that Maryland fans have wanted. And so I think that even if it's not necessarily just recruiting straight out of high school, but it's recruiting in the portal, I think that's really important. And again, with Rice, I mean, he can just provide another really go-to guard that they needed this year. And so I think that there's a lot to be excited about, especially with that starting lineup for next season. And then kind of just with the timeline, I think that Kevin Willard really turned around what was a disappointing season into an exciting offseason so far. February 21st, Derek Queen commits. March 24th, Maryland, Ryan Rice. 3 days later, Julian Reese announces that he's coming back. And then Jacoby Gillespie commits. So I think that it was a really good start to the transfer portal. Now, because it's so early, I mean, there's still a lot more that Kevin Willard can do. And I think that's the exciting part.
Yeah, you're totally right. It's been so many positives coming from what was a very negative end to the season, which has been surprising, but also maybe a little indicative of Willard really wants to turn this thing around, and he is a very motivated coach. And I think if you watch him in press conferences, like he was clawing at the fact that they weren't performing well at home. He was very frustrated. Like, you can tell how much this guy wants to win. And I do actually think it's a very positive sign at how much he's shifted his recruiting strategy just in a year. I think it points to the fact that he is willing to do whatever it takes to find success. He's not going to stick to one kind of philosophy. And if I'm Kevin Willard, I'm giving Ian Martinez a call, and I'm saying, do you want to come back home? This is the team that's going to win the Big Ten next year if you come back. That's just me though. I'll do a quick recap. They also, the Terps also did fill the assistant coach void. We've been talking a lot about all the assistant coaches they've been losing. They got Kevin Norris, an assistant coach who was previously working at UCF. Willard said he's very excited to add Kevin to our staff. He is a veteran coach who understands how to develop players and is a tenacious recruiter. If those are true, it's probably a positive. I don't know how much you guys have to add to this one, but it's kind of just clean up. But if he is a tenacious recruiter, very much a positive. Let's hope that's true.
Yeah, I think it was kind of big and that that Kevin was able to fill that void early on in the offseason process, because you don't really want to have that opening as the portal is continuing. And so just to fill it up, and it seems like he got a really good guy, really good coach in Kevin Norris. I think it was very important and a good hire to get it done early.
Yeah.
Yeah. Go ahead, Nate.
I was just looking at his resume here. 3 years at USC. He was at Florida Gulf Coast when they made that run, I believe, in 2013. Yes, and as well. So a player that's been coaching collegiately since 2008, at least at the Division I level. And he's a Baltimore native, another local guy. And, you know, that theme's just going to continue, I think, for as long as Kevin Willard's the head coach here.
Yeah, speaking of his time at USC, he helped them reach the NCAA tournament in 2015, 2016, and it was the program's first 20-win season since 2009. So he has been involved with some pretty successful schools, which is good. Let's talk about Kevin Willard, because as much as we've seen all these positives, and yes, the transfer portal and the offseason as a whole has been very positive and very early on. But speaking of next season, if they don't make the tournament, if this is a below 500 team again, what happens to Willard? Is he gone?
I don't think he's gone, just because I don't know this off the top of my head, but I believe his buyout is a lot. And I don't think because of how long Mark Turgeon stayed, I don't think Kevin Willard would be gone after next season. I think that if he doesn't make the tournament again, then it's real problems. And I think you can kind of have the talk of what's kind of going wrong. I mean, that's two straight years, especially if this was your first year of really taking control of the transfer portal, of really making it your own team. I think you can have the talk, and the fan base is really going to kind of get on edge with him. But I don't think he's going to be gone after next year if he doesn't make the tournament.
Just a quick sidetrack, because breaking news, I did not know Kevin Norris's nickname was Stink. So now I feel a lot better about that decision. So shout out to him. Nate, what are your thoughts on Kevin Willard if this team is unsuccessful next year?
And I don't know. I'm conflicted, because Damon Evans put so many chips into Kevin Willard to where I don't think he would have the guts to fire him. But on the other hand, this is Maryland basketball we're talking about. This is a program that has been held to a high standard. And I think you look at the fact that Mark Turgeon has essentially been wiped from Maryland basketball's existence after coaching here for over a decade. And that was the big thing with him, right? He only made the one Sweet 16. And if Kevin Willard I don't think it's after this year. I think year four is where you start to raise questions if he goes 3 years without making the tournament with his teams. If after that fourth year, Maryland doesn't make the tournament and the recruiting is lesser and lesser and the guys coming in from the portal aren't what they should be, I think that would be when you pull the plug, because you just have to get this program back on track. And I was talking about this with Brandon the other day. It's a shame COVID happened, because Kevin Willard's probably not here. It's probably still Mark Turgeon's basketball team. Mm-hmm. If COVID doesn't happen, because he definitely would have won at least one or two tournament games in that 2020 tournament. But it's just it's tough to think about, because Willard is a good coach, right? Like, he has the ability to make adjustments. John Rothstein doesn't tweet out he's making more adjustments than the chiropractor for no reason, right? Like, he is a good coach. He's a great defensive coach, as we've seen. Maryland finishes top 10 in all those defensive categories in the country this season. But there has to be something to give. And I do think this team will make the tournament next year. And I don't think this is going to be a conversation we're going to be having come this time in 2025. But it will be had in probably 2026 if things keep going the way that they went last season.
And Nate, that's
just kind of, I before you start doing this, I found Willard's buyout according to USA Today. It is $19 million. That is nearly five times his total salary. So no, he is not going to get fired after this year.
All right, fair enough. But I will say one thing, that is, there are going to be expectations for this next season because Derek Queen is a big signing too. So as much as you're right, the buyout is huge and he hasn't been here for long enough to really say that, like, he's had a lot of seasons with his team, there have been pretty high expectations for some of these teams that he's brought in, and they fell very flat last year, this season. And if they fall very flat next season, like Nate, as much as you just said, like, I think they're going to make the tournament next year. What if they don't? What if this is a team that's once again in the bottom three of the Big Ten? Like you mentioned, Maryland men's basketball is a big program. They consider themselves an elite program. So, you know, how long are they going to keep a guy around who's just not getting them to the tournament? I don't know, but you're right. The buyout is huge. Anything else on Willard, or should we?
I got one more thing. I understand it's not the same as Maryland, but at CN Hall, his first five seasons, he had no NCAA tournament appearances and one NIT appearance. And then he really revved it up with kind of bringing them to the NCAA tournament. So obviously it's different. It's a different program. But again, I think it takes time at the end of the day, especially now with the expansion of the Big Ten. I think it will take time. And again, because of that buyout, he's not going anywhere for some time.
No, I agree, Brandon. And honestly, I don't want Willard to be gone. I hope they find success. And I think that anyone who's involved in Maryland men's basketball wants him to succeed, because the inverse of that, if there are a lot of losses, would lead to a significantly worse situation. Because I think that coming off the Turgeon thing, considering how little success he had, if you go to your next big signing as a coach to also not finding any kind of success, I think that would be pretty detrimental to the program as a whole. I think it would have a significantly negative impact. So Willard's success, I think, is going to have a lot to do with how big Maryland men's basketball is going to be in like the next decade. So I know that's pretty intense, but I think it's relatively true. Let's talk quickly. I know we talked about the duos a little bit. I want to know, what do you think is going to be more important for Maryland men's basketball to succeed next year? Is it going to be that front court of Derek Queen and Juju Reis, or the back court of Rice and Gillespie?
I think for me, it'll probably have to be the back court, because in this day and age of basketball, the back court really runs things. I mean, you're seeing this year with Purdue and Zach Edey, this is really kind of the first year where they're making that run in the NCAA tournament, despite having it for multiple seasons. And I think it's because they finally really have really high level guards. And so I think that, because we've seen what it's like to have Juju in the front court and be kind of, even if he's not necessarily consistent, but has the talent, and it's kind of been mixed feelings. And so I think having that 1-2 in the backcourt really opens the floor a whole lot. And so I think for Maryland to have success next year, it's going to be more impactful for the backcourt to have success.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think you know what you have in Juju Reis. I think you can pretty much guarantee what you're going to have in Derek Queen. But you have no idea what you're going to have with Gillespie and Rice. And it's going to take time for that to settle in. You know, you can go through whatever practices you want. You can have as many workouts with these guys as you want. But until you step on that court in a game setting come early November, you have no idea what you have. And so I think it's going to take that time in November and December to really get their footing. And who knows? And like Brandon said, if those guys aren't successful, it's plain and simple, the team won't be successful. If Reis and Queen aren't successful, yes, that could be an issue. But if shooting to fulfill that void, that is going to work itself out. I don't think it can work the other way around.
Yeah, I totally agree, Nate. So, Brandon, just to go back to what you said, if Rice and Gillespie find success, then Derek Queen's going to win Player of the Year. I think that's kind of how those things.
Yeah, you know, that's exactly how the tips are going to align. Or Juju. I mean, one of the two. You got better odds. You got two chances.
All right. Well, that's all we have. I will say, disappointing season for the Terps, but just from this conversation alone, I think there still are a lot of positives to go into next year. And if everything goes right, this is a team that could win tournament games next year, like you mentioned earlier, Nate. If things go wrong, I don't even know how wrong things could go, because I wasn't expecting this season to go as bad as it did. They were significantly worse than they were last year, which is crazy to say considering how many positives are coming in. So it'll be very interesting to see. Any last thoughts on where this team is at right now?
No, I think all that needs to show about how good the offseason has been so far is considering how negative I was the last time we talked and how positive I am now. Normally, I'm kind of an even keel guy, I like to say. So the fact that my emotions have changed this quick, I think, Kevin Willard, that's good for you.
Yeah, Brandon took the words right out of my mouth. I think the fact that we were so much more positive in this episode than I don't even remember the last one was, but it was like two or three weeks ago, and we were just crapping on the team for the entire hour. But now 45 minutes of relatively positive talk and a lot of things to look forward to. That's what Maryland fans should be focused on.
All right. Well, if that's it, make sure to follow Brandon on Twitter at bschwartzberg03. Nate is at @NateSchwartz_. If you want to follow me, I'm Jonas Evans TV. And we, as always, are brought to you by Bet Online. It continues to be your number one source for all your basketball wagering needs, including pro and college hoops throughout the year. With up-to-minute odds, stats, and trends, you can follow your favorite team's path to the playoffs with in-game live betting, contests, and all the best player props. Experience the world's best wagering platform anytime from your desktop or your mobile device. Head to BetOnline today to become part of the team. And remember to use promo code BELIEVE for your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, the game starts here. Thank you to Harrison and Nikki, right? We got some stats from them too. Make sure to follow them as well. Thank you, Nate and Brandon, and we will see you guys next time. Bye.